I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. It's time now for our Africa update. Today, sisters are doing it for themselves. We're talking about the women leaders of Africa. Yesterday, President Bush awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom to 7 people, including Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. She's the first woman elected to head an African country.
All her life, President Sirleaf has been a pioneer. The daughter of a schoolteacher in Monrovia, she crossed the ocean as a young woman and earned 3 degrees in the United States. She's been a business executive, a development expert, a public official, and always a patriot. She loves Liberia, and she loves all its people.
So, how much progress have women made in leadership across the continent? We've got Amira Woods to give us some perspective. She is co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. Hi, Amira.
How are you, Farai?
I'm doing great. So you're from Liberia. What does this honor mean for your country?
Well, it is extraordinary that Liberia, after a history of 26 years of war, emerges with Africa's first woman president. And we are really happy to have not only the Presidential Medal of Freedom awarded to Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, but, you know, a high distinction of addressing both members of Congress and a number of distinctions coming her way. So it's exciting. But it is, Farai, really on the symbolic end. And what we're hoping for as Liberians and member of the African community overall, is that these symbolic measures are actually backed up by concrete actions on debt cancellation for Liberia and on other real concrete steps that the Bush administration can take to actually impact women's lives in Liberia and around the continent.
Now, before Ellen Johnson Sirleaf was elected president in 2006, how was the balance of power in terms of gender? Were there a lot of female elected officials or female leaders in Liberia?
Well, you know, Liberia has a mixed history. Back in the 1960s, Liberia was actually one of the first countries to send a woman to the United Nations as United Nations ambassador. So like 1967, 68, Liberia was represented by a woman at the UN. So there have been some incredible instances of women's political leadership. And those have also followed in civil society throughout Liberia. There have been instances of women leaders. However, over the past years, it has been men dominating and in particular, the Samuel Doe's, the Charles Taylor's, some really ruthless men dominating the political scene in Liberia.
Is there a program akin to affirmative action in the U.S. that deals with any of these gender issues?
Well, there's beginning to be discussion of that, and it is happening in some ways in Liberia, both looking at the legislature and changes that can be put in place to help bring about a greater participation of women in political office. But that's just beginning in Liberia. I think there are many other countries that are much further along in terms of affirmative action through constitutional changes and other party political changes that have been taking place.
Well, let's move on to Rwanda. It's a nation that's rebuilding itself after genocide. And now women make up nearly half of parliament. That is more than any other parliamentary body in the world. What's behind the trend?
It is absolutely extraordinary to see what has happened. Most people assume that, you know, the men were killed in the genocide. But if you look at the numbers, actually, the population of women is about 50%. And the population of women reflected in parliament is about 50%. So it isn't reflective of any dramatic changes in the population. But it is women's political leadership at all levels that's emerging because there was a commitment made right after the genocide, essentially, to change the constitution, to change the political party structures, to put in place concrete quotas for women. And so you see at every level, from municipal to regional to national elections, you see a space being opened for women, 30% in many cases, women mandated in these posts as candidates. And it carries forward that as women are learning leadership roles at those local levels, they continue to advance their leadership all the way through to the national level. And this is what you see reflected with 50% of their parliament controlled by women.
Are there any specific ways in which women have helped shape the destiny of Rwanda after the war?
Well, that's been the enormous potential here of women's political leadership. If you see the research that's been done on Rwanda in particular indicates that there are changes in women's impact in broader processes, so there is greater funding for health, for education, those essential services needed to have healthy, sustainable lives. You see a greater amount of the national budget being directed at those essential services. So, you know, I think when we look at Rwanda and other countries like Rwanda that have made this commitment to women's political leadership, we see the potential of women not only impacting the political processes, but impacting the very nature of people's lives at the household level through these policies that are being put in place.
Now, moving on again to South Africa, there's another rise in women leaders. There's also been some legislation that has allowed that to happen or encouraged that to happen. Give us a sense of that.
Well, again, South Africa, also Mozambique, Namibia, there are a number of African countries that have made constitutional changes. They have changed, amended their constitutions to create a space for women's political leadership. In the case of South Africa, as with Mozambique and Namibia, there are mandated quotas put into the constitution as well as into political party platforms that actually mandate a quota for women's participation. So it is affirmative action, but it is bringing forward women's political leadership. And again, you have South Africa, at least 30% of the parliament being women. Mozambique, it's 34%. And just for comparison, here in the U.S., it's about 15%. Now, all the attention and honor to Nancy Pelosi, but it has not really come up to the level of women's representation in even the U.S. population, not even close. So if you see these advances being made by African countries, you realize that Africa is actually leading the world in the right direction.
There's actually at least a possibility that a woman could head the African Union. Tell me about that.
Oh, well, that's been another extraordinary thing. Now, people talk about the change from the Organization of African Union set up in the 1960s to the African Union set up just 5 years ago. And I have to say, one of the biggest changes has been the open political space for women. So right at the start, the African Union, when it formed, created this pan-African parliament, you know, bringing together representatives from all over the continent to set Africa's priorities by Africans for Africans. And one of the first steps they did was to actually put at the head of the Pan-African Parliament a woman. Gertrude Mangala was the first head of the Pan-African Parliament. And then each of the delegations from all of the African countries were, again, mandated. There was a quota in place that at least two, but in many cases it's three or four of the five representatives from each of those countries have to have been women. So you see an open space for women in the Pan-African Parliament, in the head of the African Union, Pan-African Parliament, but also now in January, we're heading towards a critical election within the African Union for just the second chair. And there's a woman coming forward who could well take on the leadership of the African Union Commission. So the overall head of the African Union could transfer from Konari, the former president of Mali, to potentially a woman ambassador right here in Washington. I think it's also noteworthy that the first African Union ambassador to Washington is also a woman. Ambassador Ali has been installed just for 6 months now. But I think it, again, indicates the commitment that the African Union has made to women's political participation and the political space that's been opened up for women. So it's Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, yes, but throughout the continent, there are women that are actually taking the lead in political decision-making right across the continent.
Well, Amira, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Farai. Thank you.
Amira Woods is co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. She was at our headquarters in Washington, D.C.